Blog Talk Radio.
Doing tonight, I want to welcome you to Criminalized by Color, brought to you by the Tribe Family Channel. I'm your host, Mr. Carlos Martin, and I am blessed to be in front of the amazing and talented who is our guest tonight, Mr. Charles Wright, the founder of the Watts 103rd Street Rhythm and Band. He is also the author of Up Where I Come From. This is a quincentennial African-American pre-civil rights journey in the 1940s as the son of a sharecropper. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. And you?
I am blessed, man. I'm just honored to be in your presence. I can't wait to hear your story. I believe I'm just excited, or the viewers are even more excited than I am. So could you just tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Charles?
Well, I don't know if you guys know it or not. You just played a record by Sam Cooke. That brother's from my hometown. So is
wow.
David Ruff, and so is Muddy Waters, just about anybody you can mention almost, is from Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Yes, sir.
That's where I'm not actually from Clarksdale. I'm from the cotton patch about 9 miles out of Clarksdale. It's where I was born, and in fact, that's where my book starts and ends, and when I get it off the train at Union Station in Los Angeles.
Okay.
People ask me when did I start singing or playing music. unfortunately, my father's sharecropping partner, who was an old white man named Mr. Miles, somehow convinced my father that the blues was devil's music. So I actually never heard secular music hardly, only heard spiritual and country and western music until I grew up and came to California and started going to junior high school. At that point, I would go home from school and the kids would be singing all these songs that they heard on the radio, and I finally found out where they were listening to, the radio station they were listening to, and I started listening and I got hooked on the music immediately. Still, I had no aspirations of playing music or singing until the day I went to high school. The first day I went to high school, I bought some spaghetti and a roll. I sat down at an outside lunch table to eat, and I heard the most beautiful sound I ever heard. So I wrapped up my food and started walking and followed my ear. And every once in a while, it would stop, and I have to stop in my tracks and wait for it to start again.
Okay.
I finally got around behind one of the bungalows, and there was four guys with their lips protruding in each other's face singing four-part harmony. It was doo-wop music. And I came infected by that music immediately. And they practiced behind that bungalow every day. So I went back there every day, listening to them until eventually I started feeling like this is something I should be doing.
Okay.
And then I heard, have you ever heard of Jesse Belvin?
Yes, sir.
Well, I heard him sing a song on the radio, and I was so intrigued by the way he sounded. So I looked him up in the phone book, and I called him several times till I got him. I said, "Mr. Belvin, I want to sing, and I want to sound just like you." He gave me a great piece of advice, man. He said, "Get your own sound, boy, and leave mine the F alone." So I told him I thought that'd be a compliment. And he said, "You ever hear Johnny Ace?" I said, "Yeah, I heard Johnny Ace. I like the way he sounds, but you got this style." So he said, "Well, you ain't got it by now, boy, I'm hanging up." I said, "Please don't hang up. I don't know what y'all doing, but I just want to be a part of it." And he was gracious enough to invite me to his house that next weekend, where they were having a rehearsal with a group called the Turks, who had a couple of hit records on the radio, too. And I went over there, and after that, I was smitten forever.
So wow.
I started my own group from there, and I've been doing it ever since.
Jesse Belvin used to sing "Good Night, My Love," correct?
That's one of his hit songs, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
The four guys behind the bungalow who first inspired you when you were walking to this amazing sound that you heard. Do you remember those four gentlemen?
Sure. I'm still in touch with one of them. A group was called the Youngsters. They eventually had a hit record. I don't know how broad it was, but it was huge here. It was called Dreamy Eyes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you first heard doo-wop and the music on the radio, do you remember the first song that had you hooked? Do you remember what that song was?
Yeah, it wasn't exactly doo-wop. That first song that I heard the kids were singing on the way home was a song by the Clovers called "One Mint Julep." And I kind of got into that, but then I started listening to Richard Berry, I don't know if you know who that is, but he had a bunch of great records. One of the songs that he recorded that he wrote was Louie Louie.
Okay.
Which has been recorded more than any song in the record industry. 500 some odd times. Yeah. And I started listening to all the groups of the, that at that era, and I became, like I say, involved in so much. I started me a group, and within a year's time, I had my first hit record. And then when that group broke up, I got involved with another group with a huge record called You Cheated, with number 12, with the number 12 pop. And then another group called the Galahads. When that group broke up, the man who run the record company asked me to remain on as his A&R man, which I did. And he was in a slump. He was trying to get out of it. He saw something in me I hadn't seen in myself. And I produced a record for him that was a huge record called So Lonely But Goodies Remind Me of You. He cheated me out every dime I was supposed to get, so I left there and started my band. And
okay.
Just started playing in nightclubs around here. Then I got involved with Bill Cosby. And we became his backup band. He got us a contract with Warner Brothers, and the rest is history.
What was that feeling like when you first got your big contract? You know, after going through all the different groups and the grinds of making it, you know, just to pursue that and finally the big day comes, how did that feel for you?
Well, really, I didn't know if it would be a big day or not. Before that, before I got involved with Warner Brothers, I was on Mercury Records. I had done a record on Mercury Records as a single artist. I'd done one on Capitol Records as a single artist and a few other labels. So I didn't know what was going to happen. But at this point, my band was tight. I had been working with the band for about 8 years. And they were really tight, and I felt like, and I was in control to produce the music. I feel like this was it, really. I feel like, you know, this was a great opportunity. And it was, you know. I produced the first album that I produced on the group. We did it live at a nightclub. And our record, Do Your Thing, became a huge record out of that album.
Do you have any words for any inspiring upcoming artists that's on the same journey of wanting to make it in the music industry?
You know, I personally am not happy with what these artists are doing today. They're not making real music. They're making a simulation of music. And I would encourage them to go back to the real instruments, get off the click track, and so we can recapture our groove before it's too late. Because we've lost something great. It's not only in the music; it is in the music that we've lost it, but it's in our heads too. I mean, our mentality is slipping because we are used to the real deal. We created the real deal, and we've been busted down to talking and machines. And you know, groups like Earth, Wind and Fire, Ohio Players, Confunction, all these people that made great music, they don't exist hardly anymore. The new guys are doing
it.
Yeah, so I would love to see them try to recapture their groove so we could be healthy again mentally.
I think the music is definitely different. I think the songs that you guys wrote had more of a positive message in it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with telling the truth of what's going on in society, but I think that a lot of things that you guys wrote was more uplifting and respectful. I mean, you had groups like Ready for the World and things like that, and, you know, the Temptations and the music that you guys wrote, I think, uplifted our people as well, instead of just showing the negative side of society. So I do agree with you when you're saying that we definitely need to get back to the essence of who we are and our original content.
Yeah, I appreciate your agreeing on that. I don't know. I think somebody don't want us to keep moving forward. And we're falling right into the trap and helping to pull ourselves down. I think we shouldn't be calling each other niggas. That's one of the worst things we can do, as far as I'm concerned. I'm old school, I guess. I guess you would think that's, some people would think that's kind of naive of me to feel that way, but I'm telling you, you're pulling yourself down. And why should you pull yourself down? You know, and
right.
We got to stop pulling ourselves down. There's a lot of things that happened that I regret, even when we were doing stuff like James Brown music and my music. I'm guilty too. We get people in a groove. When you get people in a groove, you got their full attention, really. And
right.
what you do and say it has a lot of meaning to it. So when you say get down, that's easy to say, and it's got a groove going with it, but we're telling people while we got them captivated to get down. You know, I'm guilty of it myself, and I thought about it, and, you know, I said, wish I hadn't have done that. Wish James Brown hadn't have done it, because it's really taken an effect on us as a race of people. Yeah, so
I agree.
That might sound stupid to some people, but to me, all of these things mean something. You know, these nuances mean a lot, and we pay attention to it, and we fall into it, and I've done it, and I regret doing it, but it's done now. I don't know what I can do to retrieve it, because they've taken the stage away from my generation and given it to some people like Bobby Smurda. Do you know who that is?
Yes, sir, I know who he is.
Bad case,
I think that we need more uplifting music, especially when it comes to our women, you know, and how they are talked about in music, you know. So, because
women,
I feel like, you know, the black woman already has it so hard, and then to be talked about like that in music, how are they supposed to look at themselves? How are they supposed to be feminine? How are they supposed to, you know that they are the queens that they are and be able to walk in that when you have a whole society talking about them in a negative way through music? So I think that's something our artists can also reevaluate as well.
You just said a mouthful, brother. You're absolutely right. But, you know, they seem to be buying into it too. But the same thing, though, when you get people captivated and caught up in your message, they go along with it for some reason, you know. Women,
you've been sitting in that pot for so long, that boiling pot, you know, the boiling frog syndrome. If you put a frog in it, you know, while the water is, you know, lukewarm, and you slowly turn it up, the frog won't know the difference. But if, you know, the pot is already boiling and you put the frog in, it's going to jump out. So I think they've been slowly turning up the heat without us understanding, and we're sitting comfortably in poison, and that as a society we have to do better.
You're absolutely right. But as a society, you know, when I tried to say positive things in my music, you can only go so far and it'll jam you off. You know, I have some music that I've recorded. I have one song which has been been covered many times, but nobody's ever had a hit of it. It's a beautiful melody, but the words are something that President Warner told me. I like the melody, but I don't like the words.
Right.
But it's been covered by people like Ray Charles, Adele Reese, Les McCann, and a host of people. But nobody's had a hit on it because it's saying, actually the words are, if all men are truly brothers, why can't we love one another? Love and peace from ocean to ocean. Somebody please second my motion. If all men were born to be free, then what about you? What about me? In a world full of hate, there's nothing left. You enslaved me, you only hurt yourself. They didn't like that.
Now they don't here's the funny thing. They don't want us telling the truth. Because if we knew who we really were, we wouldn't be where we are, you know what I mean? And that's the funny thing that we have to, you know, intellectualize and wake up and, you know, continue to feed the future. And I think, is that one of the reasons why you were inspired to write your book? Because I've heard this book is amazing, Up Where We've Come. I would love to know about that, what inspired you to write that, and, you know, just share with us about it. You know, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, I decided a long time ago, about 40 years ago, to write my life story. And, you know, I would write it for a while, and, you know, you get burned out, and you have to walk away from stuff. I'd write and walk away. Sometimes I walked away for a year or two, sometime a few months, and then I get an urge to rewrite again. So now, my book that's out now only covers from 3 months before I was born until I landed in Los Angeles at 12 years old.
Yes, sir.
And the reason for that is that my book is much longer than that. But I couldn't cram my whole life story into one volume. So I wrote that book. Actually, I just took that book and separated from the rest of my memoirs. I have two other books before I can get my whole life story told, but I don't want it to be so thick, you know, the people don't want to pick it up, you know what I mean?
So, right. You got to feed them in pieces.
Yeah. And my life is really crammed full of events. I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the events. And just that part from when I was a child to landing in Los Angeles, I call that an eventful journey because there are so many things happened in there that intrigue people. And thank God I'm getting mostly 5-star reviews in Amazon on my book because people enjoy reading it.
Well, I think people just enjoy the truth, and then the fact that you're telling the truth in the book, I think that is something that's common that unites all of us. Like, I'm so intrigued how you went from being a sharecropper, you know, your dad, you know, working on a plantation to you getting to California. Just that piece right there is an amazing journey in itself, and I believe that the audience would be very curious and would love to know about that.
Yeah, well, actually, it wasn't my dad's fault. My mother, she came out here to visit. I have a sister and her boyfriend. They ran off from Mississippi and came to California, and so my mother came out here to visit them, and she came back, and she was never happy in the cotton patch again. She always threatened my father she's going to take all the female children and leave if he didn't get out from under this man's spell. because we had been under his spell for 20-some-odd years as a sharecropper. And according to my father, he was better than the rest of the white men, but he was a terrible person. So my mother finally, well, you have to read the book. I don't want to give my book away. But my mother finally got tired of it, and she did take the female children, and she left. And that left my father and the rest of my brothers and me in Mississippi struggling, trying to get together so we can go get to California. Yeah.
Well.
And trust me, that was
inspiring. You know, your journey.
Pardon me?
I said, just hearing the things that you've been through, your journey, and your beginnings to where you are now in life is amazing. And I just want to commend you on everything that you've done and the sacrifices that you made to become the man that you are. And I'm humbly grateful because the things that you've done and your family's done and their lineage has allowed me to be the man that I am today. And I've also written a book called A Warm Room, Friendly Grounds. I'm an author and I'm an actor.
Okay,
and because
what's the name?
The name of my book is A War. It's A War on Friendly.
A war? Is that
yes,
a war?
Yes, sir.
A war.
A war on friendly grounds.
Oh, a war on friendly ground.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
But I just wanted to say thank you and to your father and everyone else who made the sacrifices that they've made to allow me to be in the position that I'm in. Because without their sacrifices, I wouldn't be where I am. So I just want to say thank you to you and you know, just tell you I'm humbly grateful for everything that you guys done.
Well, that's very noble of you, man. That's very noble, and I appreciate it so much. But I ain't through. I'm constantly trying to do something to make progress for our people. But it's difficult because actually, when you in our position, don't nobody want you to get out of it because they're afraid that they owe you. And you're going to collect. And that's the problem black people have is that if people know they've done us wrong and they don't know how to deal with it, they think how to deal with it. They think all this brutality is the way to deal with it. But there'll never be rest as long as that's going on.
Right.
Yeah. So,
have you experienced any of those situations in your life, or do you care to share any of those experiences that you've been through?
I've been through a lot of stuff, brother. I don't know. My best way to explain what I've been through is in my books and through my songs. And as far as the police and all that stuff, I moved out of the ghetto, as a matter of fact, after a while, because I was getting abused by the police in the most odd ways. The last straw, I'm back in the ghetto now, but the last straw that made me make up my mind that I wouldn't last in the ghetto is that when the police stopped me one night and one of them, you know how they pat you down, and this guy, he felt my testicles. And that was it. And that was the biggest insult I thought you could do to a man. So.
Yes, sir. That's like the movie Crash, when the police officer pulls over the family and the husband is watching while his wife is being sexually harassed in front of him, and he wasn't in a position where he could defend her, and he just had to watch that. That's something that I actually lived through myself, that's in my book, because it was an experience from what I went through as well with what happened to me when I was wrongfully assaulted.
Damn. Oh, man. That happened to you, too?
Yes, sir.
That's the same thing. That's why they call white people honkies. They would come in the middle of the night and honk out in front of the house, so the man's wife has to get up out of the bed and go with him, and he'll bring her back the next day or so. That was one of the customs they used to have back in the South in the 1800s, I understand. That is, I couldn't deal with that. I would have to get killed, I think.
When that happened to me, they were putting me and my ex-wife in the back of the paddy wagon, and the officer said how he was going to take her to the hotel. When we went to court and that got brought up, he tried to say that hotel meant jailhouse. But I don't know nowhere in America or in any dictionary where hotel means jailhouse.
No, he was a dog. He was a dog.
Well, it was the same officer. I don't know if you saw the video that went viral that slammed that little 16-year-old girl in the classroom on her head while she was sitting in the desk and threw her across the classroom. That was the same guy who wrongfully jumped me in my military uniform.
No kidding. I saw that.
Yes, sir. I'm the soldier that officer did that.
No kidding.
Yes, sir.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm so sorry to hear it.
And so I'm with you and the people of how do we stand up? How do we get the equality that we need? How do we make the changes that we want? How do we make better music to uplift our people? How do we unite, you know? I mean, Nipsey Hussle says the marathon continues, and he's absolutely right. But I feel that if we all come together, it doesn't have to be a marathon. It can be a sprint.
But you know, that's the problem. The problem is we don't seem to be able to come together. And then when we do, somebody throw a lug in the situation and mess us up. I mean, I don't think the Crips and the Bloods were really enemies until somebody came along and made them enemies. Because I know some of these policemen and everything, they'll do stuff like that. You know, they'll go in there and start some stuff, and then once it started, they sit back and watch it and laugh.
They definitely plant seeds. Of course, they plant seeds. It's a mean game that they've been playing for a long time. I feel like
we gotta get hit to it.
Because if we look at history, throughout history, any time that we've united, any time we've came together, even with Black Wall Street. What happened? It got bombed. You know, anytime we do something as a people to come together, you know, it's always being destroyed, you know.
Destroyed.
But
now since you're on that subject, that's what happened to our music. It's been destroyed. And they think they've gotten taken it from us, and they're going on with it and making lots of money. And most of us, we looked impressive but didn't make any money hardly. So, you know, and it's like taking the land from the Indians. You know, they take it and make it look like it was quite all right to do.
Right.
And, yeah, And we, what do we do?
On Cadillac Records, right? Because you had brought up Muddy Waters and how the new young artists, they were paying for them to have brand new Cadillacs, and they were all excited. Yeah, yeah, this is my Cadillac. This is my Cadillac. I'm riding nice. And then he was like, well, that might that you might be riding nice, but you don't own that Cadillac. But I own my truck. Your truck might not be as nice as your Cadillac, but it's mine. And we got to start taking ownership. You know, it might not be as pretty as we might want it to be. It's at least we own it, and that's we got to understand the power of owning things instead of just trying to look pretty for everybody else.
But how many of us really own something? You know, you know, this business I'm in, this music business. The, you know, they have brothers that work in the business and in the capacity of promotion and A&R, but they are not, they're always our enemies. They put them in charge of us, but then they brutalize us. Disc jockeys take radio stations and abuse their power, you know, they get statistical about it instead of trying to do something for the neighborhood, and do something for the artists from the neighborhood. They use their power to show their roles as big wheels. But then if you take that credit card from them, and take that rented car from them, that they, these people that hire them to do this, they ain't got nothing. So,
exactly.
Yeah, so if we don't wake up and get our ego out of the situation and start thinking in terms that we have a problem that we need to solve, and we better get to solving it before it's too late, because time is running out. People are trying to get reparations now. You think they're going to give us reparations?
Nope.
If they do, I guarantee you there'll be so few of us left that it wouldn't matter. And our children are getting shot in the street. They're taking their hearts and their lungs and their liver and their brains. And they're selling them all over the world, body parts. And we don't even have a clue that that's going on. When Dick Gregory first told me about that, I told him he was crazy. That they're selling body parts. Yeah.
It is a sad. It is a sad truth in America. Like I don't think our people really understand the game of Monopoly. Because Monopoly is really, to me, the system that we live in today and how it's structured, right? Because you got the banker and you got all these properties, but if you don't own none of these properties, every time you land on somebody else's property, you got to pay, right? So imagine every time you leave your house, you landing on someone else's property, whether it's putting gas in the car, whether it's going shopping, whether it's you doing any of these different things. On the Monopoly board, they got the water bill, they got the income tax, they got parking, all the same bills, utility bills you pay, electricity, all the same bills you pay are right there on the Monopoly board. Go to jail in the and having a police officer, right there on the Monopoly board. So we got to start owning different things, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think they even got look how smart they are, right? They got community chest. Don't that sound like a person on food stamps, 40 for 50, WIC? And then they got a person taking a chance. That sound like a drug dealer, a criminal taking a chance with his life. But they got the prison on one side and the cop on the other side. And what's the two places that everybody want when they play Monopoly? Boardwalk and Park Place. But you know how rare it is to land on Boardwalk and Park Place? Then you got to be able to manipulate yourself to get around the board and hope you land on it. And then you got to have the money to purchase it.
Wow.
So, like, it's crazy. It's crazy, but, you know, We're going to go ahead and go into a small we're going to get back into it. We're going to go into a nice little commercial break. We can't give our viewers too much. We got to give them something to come back to. So we're going to go ahead and have a nice commercial. And when you guys come back, we're going to continue this amazing conversation. So, Ms. Bev, take us away.
All right.
Hammer!
Because I understand the power of forgiveness. Forgiveness is really never about the other person, but it's about yourself. Forgiveness is not a weakness, but it's a strength. Because what it allows you to do is it allows you to collect your thoughts. All of your emotion, it gives you a chance to write them down, to come up with a strategy to make a difference in life. And that's why I wrote this book right here. It's called A War on Friendly Grounds. And A War on Friendly Grounds is all about my life. So what happened to me was I was wrongfully jumped by 8 white officers in my military uniform in front of my home. But that one moment doesn't define my life. And that's why my genius is common, because I use that moment to be able to create all the different things I'm doing right now, such as books, movies, and impacts on other people's lives. That's why my genius is common. And I believe if you understand that today could be your last day and you live it and make today your best day, that your genius is common too. I have a question for you. If you died today, would you give yourself an A-plus on life's report card? If not, and you wake up and you're blessed to see tomorrow, you better live like it's extra credit because tomorrow's not promised. And if you can live every day like that, there's nothing that can stop your genius. That's why my genius is common. Thank you.
Break. Welcome back to Criminalized by Color, brought to you by the Tribe Family Channel. I'm your host, Carlos Martin, and I'm here again with the legendary Charles Wright, the founder from Watts 103rd Street Rhythm Band. We're here and we're just discussing how, as Black Americans, African Americans, we can come together and unite and do things better. But first, we have to wake up because there is a systemic game being played, and we need to be the frog jumping out of the pot and just instead of being comfortable. So, Mr. Charles, you were saying how the music industry is also being affected. Would you like to go back into that, or would you like to give us another little piece of your book? How would you like the conversation to flow, sir?
Well, I'd like to move on because I'm glad you played that music you played, especially the Mint Julep thing. Take me off my soapbox because sometimes, you know, we get mired down into a conversation that's too negative. I don't want to be negative. Actually, I want to talk about some positive things here. My book, and I love the way you presented your book. I mean, the way you have it, your speech you had a minute ago, just great, man. That's fantastic.
Yes.
And I got to get your book. I'm going to get your book. I'm going to order it from, I can get it off Amazon, right?
Yes, sir. I will send you a copy of me holding your book if you send me a copy of you holding your book.
Oh, well, we can do that if you want to do that. No
yes,
problem.
Because I want to support you again.
Okay, you got a deal.
Cool.
Yeah, I'd love to read your book. And I know that traumatized you, man, and what you went through there. I know it was a trauma. And
because you talked about us being on a positive track, I want to let you know my book was definitely traumatizing, but it was a horrible blessing. Because you can't have a rainbow without the storm. And that was just the storm that allowed me to be walking in my rainbow. Because if that situation never happened, I wouldn't be in the position that I am right now hosting this show, talking to you. I wouldn't be the director. I wouldn't be the actor. I would still be a soldier in the United States Army. So it was a horrible blessing. But the reason why it's a blessing is because I chose to keep God first. I chose to take that situation and not let that moment define my life and to make something more out of it so that way I can be an advocate for our people. So I'm grateful in a strange kind of way.
Well, you said something very important, forgiveness. You know, if you got the power to forgive, that's really sometimes take a lot of power. And that's one thing that I want to say about black people. And this is really one of our greatest problems. If we get mad at each other, we never, hardly ever, come to terms with the situation and say, well, shoot, forget that. Let's move on. We stay mad at each other forever. And that's ridiculous. Because every other race of people on the planet are pulling together to keep themselves floating. And we seem to be drowning because of our faults that we got to get over. We got to get over some of these faults. One of them is forgiveness. It's so important because if you don't have the ability to forgive, you'll be miserable the rest of your life.
Mr. Charles, you are so on point right now. You know, because I did an interview with Jake Tapper, and I want to definitely shout out Nessa from Hot 97 because she blessed me with the interview as well. But Mr. Jake Tapper said, if you saw Officer Benjamin Fields again, what would you say? And I said, I forgive him. And I think people really don't understand that statement. Am I mad? Yes. Am I hurt? Yes. Am I traumatized? Yes. But my forgiveness had nothing to do with him and everything to do with me, so that way I can find the peace to be able to fight back in the right manner.
Yes. Yeah, so so you won't continue being mad, hurt, and traumatized. It makes sense.
Right, because here's the thing. If I'm angry, I go get a gun, I go shoot up something, that changes nothing.
It changes your life. Put you in a hell of a position.
Right, our people are so emotional, right? And I think that other races understand that and they play off of us being emotional. But if we could take the time just for a second to collect our thoughts, to strategize on how we want to handle the task at hand, oh my God, we could change so many different things. We could move so many mountains. Because look at what we were in. Slavery wasn't that long ago. And look at how far we've come. If we were ever to be united as a people, look how much further we could go.
Oh, man. But, you know, that's the problem. Like I say, every time we try to unite, somebody else come in and throw the lug in there, and we believe whatever they said that divides us rather than saying, really thinking, you know, wait a minute. These people don't want us to get together.
But
somebody don't want us to get.
If we laid out a map of every time we came together and said, okay, what happened to stop this movement? What happened to stop this momentum? Because we got to do our own research on our own selves as well. You know what I mean? Because if they studying us, are we studying us? Because sometimes I believe they know us better than we know us. But if we just took the time to say, okay, during this period of time when Harriet Tubman did this, Martin Luther King did this, Malcolm X did this, Muhammad Ali did this, Nipsey Hussle did this, and we looked at all of our great leaders, and we said, what happened to the momentum? The Million Man March, what happened to the momentum? And if we could decipher that code, so that way when that happens, because no matter what happens in life, I don't care what you want to be, right? If you want to be a musician, if you want to get a college degree, whatever you want to do, life says, okay, let's see how bad you want it. In church, they call it a testimony. But in order to have a testimony, you got to have a test. What happens when we come together? How do we pass this test together? How do we stick together in this test so we can get to the testimony? Because technically, if we wanted to go biblical, the promised land has already been promised, which means it's already there. The problem is on the journey to the promised land, we get caught up in these different tests. Peter walking on water, it's nothing but a test. How many times are we going to take our eye off the prize to get to where we say we really want to be? And we got to figure that out.
Well, first, in order to figure it out, you got to be thinking in the same direction. We think in so many different directions. And, you know, you can talk to a person and they'll think, well, you're crazy. You know, when you really get serious about something and lay the real facts down in front of people, they don't understand it. So they'll tell you you're crazy. So how do we get past that? I think education is I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. We need some sort of an education, but are we getting the right education? I don't know. The most successful black people, they tell me, are ones who were uneducated.
Because, you know, though, honestly, the education system that we have in place in school is honestly rewriting the books, is rechanging our history and the things that our forefathers and sacrifices, you know, that they've made is being altered. It's not what it really is, you know what I mean? So that's a great question when we say, are we getting the right education, and what can we do about that? And, you know, that's why I'm so happy that Ms. Bev gave me this position as the host, because I would like to have conversations like this to create positive controversy. You know, then talk about the difficult things in a positive manner. That way it's not a conversation, but it's result-oriented.
All right. Now, see, my book could have a question mark up from where we've come. It could be a question mark behind that. But it's history. It's real history. And so we can understand where we come from, really, and how far we really have to go and what we have to do to go there. We can't do that as long as we fantasize and dealing with bull dookie, you understand? Because we go for a whole lot of, we like to party, we like to do a whole lot of stuff that's unnecessary. We need to be getting ourselves together.
Focus. We got to get more focused.
But we got to know where we got to know where we've been.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Trump.
We got to know what we've been through to know how to get out of it. Because we don't know. In California, I don't know where you are, but in California, the average black person here don't have the slightest idea of what's really going on. Because
I'm out here in Koreatown, and I would love to connect with you. I would love to meet up, take you out for coffee, or take you out for lunch or something, and just sit down and pick your mind to expand on this. Because, you know, I know you got a website called expressyourself.net, and, you know, have a lot of different things, like scholarships and things like that. So I would love for you to educate the people about your website and how they can find you.
Expressyourself.net is that simple. But I'd love to get together with you too, man, anytime.
Yes, sir. Well, after we get done with this radio interview, I'll give Ms. Bev my information. We'll connect. I'll see when you're free. We'll make that happen. Because what I want our people to understand is we just can't talk about it. We got to be result-oriented, and we got to start creating results so that way we're honoring the people from our past, yet setting up our future at the same time. Like this young man, he blew my mind, Mr. Charles. He said, "You are your ancestors' dream."
And I said, oh, that's great.
What?
Yeah,
and
but you can't.
Deal with that.
None of us can do anything alone, though.
Correct.
Yeah, so that's why we keep talking about getting together, but I don't know how we're going to do that, but I hope that we can start somewhere. Like, look at Nipsey Hussle. He had the right idea, and look what happened to him.
But I would rather die for something than die for nothing, Mr. Charles, to be honest with you.
I heard that.
And
yeah.
I want people to understand this. I want everyone to get out there, get on Amazon, buy Mr. Charles's book. You know, just participate in it. Show love. It's very important that we support each other. We have to do these different type of things. You know, support my book as well. Just support us. Make sure that you get out there and you go on Amazon and you buy Up From Where I've Come. Make sure you buy that.
From where we've come, but I don't want them to buy it just so I can make money. I want them to buy it so they can be educated, actually, where their roots are, what we've experienced, have to go through before we get to where we got to go. It's important.
Yes, sir. Post it. Share it on Instagram. Share it on Facebook. Share it on Snapchat, because we need to educate ourselves and our future and our kids. We need to do this. This has to happen. So make sure you go on Amazon and get Up From Where We've Come From. And also look up A War on Friendly Grounds. I promise you, these are two amazing reads, and they're both educational on how we can come together to get the equality that we want, and we can answer some tough questions together. Do you have any final words, Mr. Charles?
I just hope that we've been effective, and I'm glad to talk to you, and I hope to meet you soon. And that's about all I got to say. And thank you for the interview. And we can do this anytime you want to. I appreciate it.
Mr. Charles, I'm humbly grateful. I promise you, as soon as this is over with, I'm calling you. I'm connecting with you. If you're free, I'll come see you today, sir. It's been such an honor and a pleasure to just be in your grace and hear your story. And I just want to give a special shout-out to Criminalized by Color, the Tribe Family Channel, Ms. Beverly Black, who has allowed us this platform to be able to speak to you guys. We love you. Tune in for the next show. And I just want to say thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to leave the audience with this. What makes a rainbow beautiful? Is it not the diversity of colors? If that's true, is mankind's kryptonite trying to leave one color better than the next? And if that ever happens, is it still a rainbow? I think not. So why are we destroying something that God created beautiful with invisible lines of hate? We're all 6 degrees of separation from loving each other, from getting along, from uniting. That's what we're here to do. We're here to unite. I love you guys.
Y'all hear me out. Express yourself. Come on, y'all. Express yourself.
A long time coming, but I know